Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Thank you for joining us on another edition of Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Every once in a while, we meet someone whose greatest struggles become the foundation of their greatest purpose. My guest today is one of those people. Chris Yarnell is a United States Marine Corps veteran, community leader, and the founder of Battleborn, a nonprofit organization dedicated to serving veterans, first responders, and their families throughout the region. What began as one man's determination to ensure that no veteran would ever hear the words, "Sorry, we can't help you," has grown into a powerful movement built on compassion, connection, dignity, and hope. Chris's journey has not been an easy one. From the loss of his father at an early age, to an injury that ended his military career, to battles with addiction, homelessness, and finding purpose after service, his story is one of resilience, redemption, and unwavering commitment to others. Today, Battleborn has become a lifeline for countless veterans who need someone to walk beside them through life's greatest challenges. This conversation is about leadership. It's also about service. It's about healing, and perhaps most importantly, it's about what happens when one person decides that their pain will not define them, but instead become a source for hope for others. Chris, welcome to Trailblazers.
Thank you for having me.
Chris, your story begins long before Battleborn. Can you take us back to the young Chris Yarnell, the one that I knew that I went to school with? What experiences shaped your character and ultimately led you toward a life of service?
Wow. Well, I'd have to say growing up in Easton was a unique childhood error. But if I had to think about the answer to this question, it would be, you know, growing up, I grew up in a predominantly military family. Mm-hmm. So that helped shape the character briefly. And, you know, like a typical kid, I had a really difficult time following directions. And so, like, I came up with this great idea that no one was able to tell me what to do, so I was going to join the service because they were going to teach me how to follow the direction of them telling me what to do, which is absolutely absurd. But and the other thing I like to talk about when people ask this question is father was in the Army. Grandfather served in World War II. I remember telling them I didn't want to go to college. This is an unusual story of, I remember sitting at the table and telling my grandfather and my father, you know, hey, I'm thinking about joining the military. And they said, oh, what branch would you join if you were going to join? And, you know, father Army, grandpop Navy. I said, I'm thinking about joining the Marines because they had, like, the coolest commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember this sword and stuff?
Yes.
So they looked at me and they laughed. And I just, like, looked at them and they said, oh, yeah, good luck. You'll never make it. So ironically, that was the catapult. That was the catalyst to, like, I'm going to show you. And that's what got me there. Like, them... You know, it's not that they didn't believe in me, but they just knew the type of kid I was.
Uh-huh.
Like, the Marines are discipline, you know, attention to detail, a little more strict. So they just thought, yeah, okay, let us know how that works. And then I had to prove them wrong.
Wow. you know, actually, my second question was about, you know, why did you decide to do the Marine Corps? And you've answered that, but you sound a lot like my son who... You know, we're having the conversation, he's 16, and we're having the conversation about what he wants to do after he graduates, and is he going to go to college, is he going to go into the service, and whatever, and oddly enough, he sounds identical to you. He's like, okay, well, he says to me, you know, I said, why don't you try the Air Force, and he's like, if I'm going to go into the service, it's going to be a Navy SEAL, and I'm like, buddy. Like, you know, the Marine Corps, the Navy SEALs, like these are like mm-hmm. really intense experiences. Why not just, you know, start somewhere? But it sounds like, you know, that kind of catapulted you into what kind of service you actually wanted to do.
Well, one of the most famous Navy SEALs on the planet, mm-hmm. David Goggins, I had the pleasure of doing a program that helped bring him to the Lehigh Valley. And my son was 7 years old and wanted me to ask him this question in front of 1,500 people in the Executive Charter Academy gymnasium. And I said to my son, you ask him. So he stood up, shaking in his voice, and he said, Mr. Goggins, thank you for your service to our country. Thank you for coming to Allentown. And I want to know, should I join the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, or be a Marine like my dad? And David Goggins laughed in front of everybody because of the cuteness of Josiah. And he said, did you hear this young man? Does he know I've been in almost every branch of the service? He looked at my son and said, join the Air Force, son. They treat their people the best. So a United States Navy SEAL, Airborne Ranger, and Delta Force in the Air Force, or whatever their special forces are called, I forget right at the moment, literally looked and told my son to join the Air Force. A Navy SEAL said, join the Air Force, because he was in the Air Force first.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, so tell your son, join the Air Force.
and a note to our listeners as well, right? No, but your service, and by the way, thank you for your service. But your military career was cut short due to a serious injury. How difficult was it to reconcile the future you envisioned with the reality that you were then suddenly faced with?
Wow. Military career was cut very short, a lot sooner than I would have liked it to. But if I have to think about how to express that, it was very difficult. Because as I stated earlier, my goal was to prove to my grandfather, to my uncles, to my dad that, hey, I can do this. Even though you don't think I can, I'm going to show you, you know? And having this plan of serving 20 years in the Marines and being discharged medically and honorably, really without my permission, they gave me a chance to think about it, but neither here nor there, it wasn't what was in the plan. So to have to come back almost as if, and this isn't the reality, but this is the way I felt, like with my tail tucked between my legs, that somehow I failed because of an injury that was no fault of my own. It was difficult because now you're faced with, what do I do? This was my life plan. It didn't work out. And I would deny for years, oh, that didn't bother me. It did bother me. It really plagued me because I just didn't know what to do. I had no backup plan. So it was a real difficult time for me. A lot of struggles with it and trying to find my, because now you have to reinvent your purpose all over again. You know, and for men, not just veterans, for men in general, you know, we don't talk enough about things like that. We don't talk about how things affect us. You know, you're taught to, you know, we don't talk about that. You know, we stuff it.
Yeah.
We keep going. Yeah. So it was tough.
And I want to talk about another challenge also that you faced and how you dealt with that. You've spoken publicly about losing your father to suicide, struggling with anger and addiction, even homelessness, and finding your way through some incredibly dark seasons. Looking back, what was the turning point that changed the trajectory of your life to be in service to others, specifically veterans, and where did that passion, what fueled that passion? What fueled that fire?
Wow. So at a very early young age, I did not know then, but I know now, my grandfather suffered from PTSD from World War II. He would have a few drinks at night. He was very loving and caring during the day. He'd have a few drinks. He would start talking about things he experienced, things that terrified me as a young boy. He would get emotional and, you know, all I could do was listen. Yeah. What kid has anything to say? And it just, you know, my grandmother would call it shell shock. We now change it to PTSD and then now PTS. But the point here is, watching him go through that, then watching my father die by suicide on my first day of 10th grade, coming downstairs. Now, you remember how in Easton, we didn't start high school till 10th grade.
Right.
I'm going to my first day of school in high school, And I come down to make breakfast. And my aunt and my mom are there. And they said, hey, sit down. We want to talk to you. And they, you know, they tell me. Now, I said I could get through that, right?
You won't be the first or the last.
No, but you know, it was just, I didn't know why, you know. But I'm okay with it today. I understand now. But, you know, it was just, it was tough. Like, I didn't understand why. So part of the answer to your question is I wanted to do something that I couldn't help them. So maybe we can help others.
I love that. Let's shift gears a little bit. You've said that what you missed most about leaving the Marines was the ability to help people. How did that realization ultimately become the spark that ignited Battleborn?
Wow. So usually I cry over this answer.
You can cry again. That's well, okay. Nah, you won't be the first or the last on the
well,
program.
The good thing is they're not seeing us. They're just hearing it. But no, I'm okay with that, man. Like, crying's good. Crying's good. It cleanses the soul, right? Yes. It makes me feel alive.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So this is actually my true favorite part of the story, which was, it was 2014. Mm-hmm. I'm depressed. I'm drinking. I'm on house arrest for a DUI, right? My life is in shambles. And I'll never forget this. My aunt's pastor, who is still a friend of mine today, Pastor Gary Baracco, give him a little shout out. 20 years in the Army, he comes over the house and he's like, hey, we're going out this weekend to some homeless camps to help people. And I know we talked about me doing, you know, keeping our language clean for the viewers, right? But I literally looked at him, and he's a pastor, and I said, what the hell would I want to do that for? He's like, oh, come on, you know, you get out of the house. And I looked at him, I was like, and I thought, Gary, look at my life. How is seeing people worse off than me going to benefit me? Mm. But you see, Gary knew something I didn't know, and it's something we do at Battleborn. He knew that if he could get me back out in some form of service— Right. See, I truly believe that people who join the military, something is in their DNA, that they are wired to serve. And a lot of folks, when they come home, whether from war or just military in general, and they go into normal life now, that service component and that camaraderie is missing. Mm. And it gets lost. So to answer the question as briefly as possible, that day when I went out to the camp, unwillingly, my sense of purpose was restored. Mm. I felt like this is what was missing. And from the guy who didn't want to go out to the guy then who said, when are we going out again? You know, so that was it. You know, it gave me something to do. And I truly, truly believe that when we help others, we help ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right? I've never had someone disagree with that statement. So when I'm helping someone else, my problems become less because I'm now not focused on my problems. I'm focused on helping someone else find a solution. Battleborn is solution oriented. We're not looking at the problem. We're looking at what's the solution. Mm-hmm. So,
and you and your wife, Cadence, founded Battleborn in 2018 with little more than determination, faith, and truly a mission. What did those early days look like, and how did you know the organization was filling a critical need?
Wow. What it looked like then was a lot different than what it looked like now. Mm-hmm. The work has gotten greater, I always like to say.
You guys have really grown. Yeah.
The need is great, the workers are few, right? And if I would have known then how much more this was going to entail, mm-hmm. we might not be here, right? Mm. But we stay in the fight, right? So how we knew we were filling the gap is my wife was on the board of another nonprofit. I had transitioned from doing the homeless outreach with a veterans charity to a support group charity that came up in the valley that a buddy of mine started. And what we saw with both charities and a few of the other charities we knew were that they provided a service, right? But when veterans would go to them for that service and they would say, oh, you know, we know veterans come with a multitude of problems. They don't come when they have one problem. They come when everything is like overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So it isn't just, hey, I need food. It's like, I need food. I'm behind on my rent. This is going on. Mm-hmm. Like they wait because of pride most times till like it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So when veterans would come to these groups, which by make sure I say this right, they do amazing work, but they do like one thing or two things and say, hey, I also need help with this. Mm-hmm. We would see groups say, oh, well, sorry, we don't do that. Mm. And it takes a lot for a veteran or a first responder to ask for help. And I can tell you right now that if they ask for help and they get told no, they're not asking again. So what we wanted to do is create a organization that provided services that were not being done and then work with the existing organizations to fill in that gap so we could be a community of, hey, we're going to take care of this issue for you, but we're going to take you over to our friends at so-and-so to help with that other need.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so Battleborn has become known for as being the organization that refuses to tell veterans no. How would you describe the culture and philosophy that not only sets the the organization apart from traditional service organizations, but also, you know, shows up in a way that is more meaningful and perhaps delivers upon, I mean, how do you, that must be such a collaboration effort. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I think what sets the whole thing apart is, and I'm not saying none of the organizations, but prior to our existence, so you have two types of organizations. You have silos and you have hubs. Mm-hmm. In the Marines, we have what we call a liaison. He's the guy on base that you go to, like when you need a resource or some kind of
assistance.
Right. He's like listen, we always joke around. Our friend calls us at Battleborn. He's like, Battleborn is the guy who knows a guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know that guy, like when you need a sticker for your car because it's not going to pass inspection?
I don't.
Okay. Well, you know what I mean. We're like the guy who knows a guy. So if we can't help you, we're going to try to the best of our ability to get you to someone who can. That's what sets the tone for us. And when we came out, there was a lot of silos. I mean, it's not a negative thing. There was just organizations that were so mission-focused on what they do that maybe they didn't know about other organizations. So we were like, if we can get all these organizations together, create events where they're coming to, and I don't like to use the term network, but create community, mm-hmm. right? We have these coffee and connections where we invite organizations. Do you know how many people we've crossed here in the Valley that don't know of other charities? Like, for example, I won't name. There's a charity right here in the Valley that's been in business for 40 years. Do you know I meet people who still don't even know who they are? Mm. How can you be in business for 40 years and someone who's in the same field of helping veterans not know you exist?
Mm-hmm. And certainly they can't vote for you if they don't know you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? That's so that's just, that was the mindset.
Can you share a story about a veteran or family whose life was transformed through Battleborn's work and one that reminds you why this mission matters so much?
I thought you said this podcast is 30 minutes. Okay, I'll tell you my
story. Cliff Note version.
I'll tell you the story that brings tears to my wife's eyes every single time. It was 2018. We had, I like to say, peanuts in our bank account, right? We didn't have nothing, right? Pennies. Mm-hmm. Right? We you know, got out there. We sold our T-shirts out of the trunk of our cars to anyone who would buy one and took the proceeds and provided a lot of services. Because in 18, you could provide a lot more services with a lot of less money, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
That's another radio show. But anyway, we got a call from Change on 3rd Street in Easton, which was a community center, which now no longer exists, right? And they would be open and people could come in. And one of our teammates, who's a Marine, worked at that center. And a guy came in from Safe Harbor, like to come in and look at the computer and try to find jobs and look at resources. And he had found a job, so he was living at Safe Harbor, and he found a job at TGI Fridays in Phillipsburg, past the mall. This was a hike.
Yeah.
And he walked up there and he interviewed. And by the way, this man had been a chef in the United States Navy. And he had fell on hard times, lost a relationship, and went from living in an apartment with his fiance to living in the shelter. So he gets the job. He has no money. He goes up to start his first day at work. And the manager who hired him just went on vacation. And the kitchen manager says, well, hey, where's your shoes? And he's like, what shoes? And they said, you need non-slip shoes to work in the kitchen. And he said, oh, I don't have them. And they sent him back. So the director of change on Hamilton said, yo, can we help this guy with non-slip shoes? We're like, yes, have him meet us on Sunday. We'll pick him up. We'll take him. We'll get him the shoes. So my wife and I drive down there on Sunday. He's there. He showed up. We pick him up in downtown Easton. We drive him to Walmart. I said, pick out the shoes. They had $80 pair. They had different variations of price. He picked up the $34 shoes. And I said, no, get the best ones, man. Like, get the shoes that... He said, look, I appreciate it. These are good. These are good enough. I tried to buy him jeans. I said, you need new T-shirts for work? Do you need... What else do you need? No, thank you, man. This is good. He did not take or want to take anything more than he needed. Right? So we took him out for lunch. He agreed to lunch. He was very, like, humble and modest. He did not, like, want extra stuff. So we're talking to him at lunch. Chef in the Navy, right? I happen to know his brother. They're both from Easton. You know how Easton is. We know everybody. So end of story is he goes, calls the job from my cell phone because he didn't have a cell phone. And he said, hey, I got my shoes. And they said, the manager who hired you went on vacation. He said, look, I really need to start this job. He said, I'm with my friend right now. He presented me as like a case manager. Can you talk to him? I said, look, we got his shoes. He's in a tough situation. Is there any way? And they made like an exception and they brought him in the next day. 2 weeks later, he calls me. He was promoted to a higher position. And within 3 months, he called us back. And he had enough money from working there to get his own apartment. So when I tell you, when people say, oh, you know, I'd like to donate money, but I don't have much. $35, $35 non-slip shoes. Now, he did the work. Changed the trajectory of a man's entire life. So every time I tell that story, which is not often, my wife breaks down because she was there and she knows how much that made a difference. So when I tell people, like, you don't realize the impact you can make with one gesture. Like, who, you know, that's a success story.
How's he doing today? Do you know?
Well, you know, we bumped into him about 2 years later. He was still doing good. He wasn't working at that restaurant no more. But I don't know since then because COVID. But from 18 to like 20 when we saw him again, I mean, I don't know. But I haven't heard he, as far as I know, he's never ended up back in Safe Harbor, which, you know, thank God they're there to help folks when they fall on hard times. But thank God he didn't have to return. So.
And what a fantastic partnership between Battleborn and Safe Harbor.
Oh, we love them. We work with all of the shelters and Victory House. We just, you know, if we can help them and they help us, we refer to them, they refer to us.
Collaborations have clearly been a major part of Battleborn's success. What partnerships and alliances have been instrumental in helping Battleborn expand its impact across the region, do you think?
Well, in 2021, we contracted with Northampton County to provide veteran services and a drop-in location in Northampton weekly. So that partnership has been huge. That pretty much launched us into other partnerships. We have a few MOUs with treatment centers. One of our most, I think, proud partnership, besides Northampton County, is we contract with VHP. Valley Health Partners Veterans Health Program. So we refer to them. They refer to us. We provide some programs within their, you know, program and vice versa. We're able to refer veterans to them for services we are not capable to handle, like things like clinical. Battleborn is not clinical. Battleborn is not medical. Mm-hmm. So having that partnership is huge, because a lot of smaller organizations would not be able to meet these needs if we didn't have, like, not just us, but other ones. So that's a pretty good partnership. And the latest thing that we're probably most proud of, we've been contracting with VHP for 5 years. We now are a VA community wellness partner, which is huge for us. We started a summit with the VA. We have a community wellness summit yearly. It's been 3 years now. We just had the third annual, and our goal is to keep going to every county in Pennsylvania each year and bringing all these community providers together for them to learn about topics and services and meet one another. It's great. So I love being a part of the VA Wellness Committee.
What's still needed, do you think? You know, collaborations, support. If you had to ask listeners to lean in and help out, what's still needed? What collaborations would you still like to see come together?
Oh, boy. So I don't know if I'm sure a lot of listeners wouldn't know this. And not because, you know, it's just not stuff that's talked about a lot. Pennsylvania has 650,000 veterans. A few years back, we had 700, but a lot of the veterans are older. Pennsylvania is one of the highest population of veterans in the country. And just think about it. The reason we're like third or whatever is some of the other states have more active bases. Mm-hmm. You know, when people get out of the military, they stay where they lived. And, you know, we don't. So for us to have 650,000 veterans in the state of Pennsylvania is a fairly large number. The three biggest issues our Pennsylvania veterans face are food insecurity, transportation, and housing. And so the thing I would like to see more of, we provide those three services, by the way. And that's not to like pat ourselves on the back, but we just know that's the biggest need. So we tap into those areas. We have a food share program. We help with transportation. If Battleborn can't drive you and you're within a reasonable distance, we'll send you in an Uber, right? We have the community center that we opened in Allentown, like right at the end of COVID, because veterans didn't have a place to meet. And last but not least, we just opened our first veterans transition home in 2024, and we're working on a second one. Oh, wow. So to answer that question for you, the collaborations I would like to see more of is secondary housing options, mm-hmm. right? We have shelters. We have homeless shelters and like starting programs. But some of those veterans, when they leave there, if they haven't fared well while their stay was there, they're like a second phase housing, right? And one of the things we're working on, I almost don't want to say it because I want to be the first one to do it, is there's a need for more women veteran services, right? We always say veterans, but a lot of the women get overlooked. And I only say that because we have 4 women veterans on our team who educate me on a daily basis of what they go through. Mm-hmm. So we need more women stuff.
And what if someone did want to get involved, what's the website?
We are battleborn.com.
Okay.
Is our website. You can also get us through our Facebook, our Instagram, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. We try to get out there. We don't have every single platform because we don't have finances to hire a social media manager, mm-hmm. right? And that's a lot of work, man. So.
And if they follow that, they can actually learn more about some of the upcoming events as well.
I would invite everyone listening to please follow, because it's one thing for you to hear me say what we do. It's another thing to see it in action. I always tell people, come out to one of our food shares. Mm-hmm. Come out to one of our food shares, because that is our favorite program. So this Wednesday, we fed 77 families, not with a meal, but with a package. Meat, milk, eggs, produce, canned goods, hygiene products. We give them a ton of necessities. When you see 77 people impacted in one day, you understand the magnitude of the mission. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not just seeing, okay, hey, we gave a veteran a gift card to a grocery store. That's great. We love that too. But watching 77 people pull up to our Veterans Resource Center, get out of the car, shake the volunteers' hands, thank everybody for this amount of food that is helping them. Because a lot of our vets are older, they're on Social Security. So with the rising cost of food, they can't supplement that. So some of them are coming to us to get food because their income is not going far enough.
Mm-hmm. Chris, you know, as you look at the future, and this is, you know, 30-second response, if you will, because we just have another moment in the program, but looking ahead 5 or 10 years, what's the vision for Battleborn, and how would you measure success at this point? And what legacy do you want to leave behind?
We've had a couple people reach out and said, we love what you're doing in the Valley, and our services pretty much reach far beyond the Valley, by the way, but I'd love to see other Battleborns pop up in different areas. But I think the total all legacy is we have one house. I'd like to, truthfully, like my dream is to have a house
compound.
In every, well, a compound might be in the works, but shout out to Sam Del Rosario from Sirhan up the street, the Air Force veteran, retired police officer who is a realtor. We got some great ideas in the work, but the legacy I'd like to see is us having a house or some sort of residency for veterans in every single county we could possibly get before my life comes to an end.
Chris, your story is a reminder that our greatest wounds can become our greatest source of strength. What you've built through Battleborn is far more than a nonprofit. It's a community, it's a lifeline, and it's proof that one person who refuses to quit can create ripple effects that touch thousands of lives. To our listeners, if today's conversation moved you, challenged you, or inspired you, I encourage you to learn more about Battleborn and the incredible work they are doing to support veterans, first responders, and their families. Until next time, I'm Melody Bradford, and this has been Trailblazers, where we celebrate the people who don't simply follow a path, they create one. Thank you for listening, and Chris, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.